Welcome, everybody, to this week's Science Metaverse podcast. I'm Keita Funakawa.
And I'm Steve McCloskey.
Cool. Well, we have so much stuff to talk about. And like Meta Connect hasn't even come about yet. That's happening next week. Check out Meta Connect. It's going to be a good time. But we have a lot of topics. So let's dive in. First off, speaking of announcements, Lenovo has a new headset now. And so they announced this somewhat kind of quietly. It wasn't really covered too much, but it's also because, you know, very much related to the science metaverse. It's used for, or it's marketed as a enterprise first headset. And so the Lenovo Think Reality VRX is a new all-in-one virtual reality solution designed for enterprise metaverse. So really cool to see. It kind of looks, or from a, you know, on paper, it actually looks fairly on par with the Pico Neo 4, which is starting to get some reviews out there. And so really cool to see kind of counterbalance on the back. It also features color pass through, which is exciting as well, kind of like the Vario XR3. And so Lenovo obviously has a fairly large track record with, different enterprises, including, you know, biopharma enterprises, with their compute solutions. And so really glad to see them doubling down in XR, providing an enterprise, solution. You know, for those of you who don't know, you know, we actually encounter quite a bit of friction with like consumer grade headsets in the enterprise environment. And so the fact that Lenovo is actually pushing enterprise ready, XR, you know, it's not just HTC who had the Focus 3, is, really awesome to see. So. Yeah,
I mean, I'm excited. Steve, what were your thoughts? Lenovo has been a great hardware manufacturer for many enterprise solutions. They're right up there with the biggest enterprise PC makers in the world. They had their run with they worked on the Rift S with Oculus and Meta, Facebook, and then they have been working on their own headsets with the Windows Mixed Reality. I think that this is a step in the right direction to go standalone, to go mixed reality. The controllers look similar to like maybe what we had on the Quest 1 or so. And then I'd say my only concern about the headset, besides, you know, potential software UI, like, you know, you got to just kind of see that type of stuff to really evaluate it. But it is sort of this slipping down on your face. Like we often say in our demo procedures, like, you know, if you could see somebody's eyebrows poking out from under the headset, you know, that thing is way too low on their face. And I'm not seeing how it's going to like stop. It doesn't have a top strap, which can work, but then it doesn't seem to have much of a front forehead divot. Especially when you look at how that sits on the model's face in that one photo that we have. But I do like the counterbalance. I'm just not sure how it's going to stop falling down, you know?
Or what I'm worried about, and this even happens with my Quest 2 that I'm wearing right now, which is like, sometimes I put the top strap too loose, and then I rely too much on the tension from the back strap, and then I get a, you know, headache because it's like too tight on my face, right? Mm-hmm. And so like that's another kind of concern that I have, but you know, who knows, we gotta try it.
Yeah, because you know, you often end up with like a forehead line or like a cheek indent if you do it too hard, and if you don't, you know, if you have it normal, you don't end up with this, you know, big red line on your face. But I could see people trying to tighten this one maybe a bit too much. But again, with the ergonomics, you just got to kind of feel it out. I hope that they continue to explore how facial ergonomics work on everyone and maybe provide some different facial cover options when they launch.
Yep, definitely. Well, and then the other thing is, their Think Reality platform is really starting to get built out, right? They've had numerous, or I believe they've had one or two other headsets on the Think Reality platform, right? Because I think, you know, Lenovo has their ThinkPad line, mm-hmm, of computers and stuff. And so it's kind of cool to see them building out their Think Reality line.
Yeah. No, I'm excited. I think the Lenovo ThinkPad has been a game changer with the adding of the GPUs and sort of getting it up to that VR readiness. And so if you could have this in standalone mode and tethered mode and be running, you know, full enterprise applications for different things, you know, it could be designing molecules like you would do in Nano or many other use cases. I think this could just be a standard solution for many businesses looking to adopt XR.
Yeah. Steve, did you get a chance to watch their video trailer? Yeah, it was actually pretty funny. So for those of you, you know, looking up the Think Reality VRX, would definitely recommend watching that video. It's pretty funny because it starts off, you know, oh, the metaverse. It's like, what is the metaverse anyway? And then they're like, enterprise metaverse is real. So it was kind of like self-aware and meta-ironic. And, you know, I think it was still like not like great. Like it was all right. It wasn't bad, but it could have been slightly better, I would say. But I mean, you know, not a bad splash. And I think, you know, they're really trying to like market it towards enterprise, right? So I guess it makes sense that I mean, they don't, I guess, you know, putting in top-notch,
yeah.
top-notch, I mean, yeah,
we,
funding.
We could have, in the 90s or whatever, just started branding the internet as the metaverse, and then people would be like, no, but like, I could send an Excel sheet to my boss over an email, like, this is amazing. You know, it's like going to be used for business things and for other stuff. And so I think that, yeah, the current advent of the metaverse, although is in principle the internet with more immersive technologies and layers on top of reality and all these cool things, you know, practically it's like, how is this going to help the world? And so, you know, leaning into the business use cases, you know, how does this add productivity in the workplace? How does this allow new design of new technology and new things that might have never been made without the use of this technology? So yeah, you know, in general, I think it's a good direction for them to be kind of looking at, you know, how is this practical?
Yeah. And, oh man, I was going to say something, but I forgot, but we have a lot of topics, so I'm down to move on.
Yep.
Next up is, AirBridge for Quest 2. I'm really looking forward to this one. Oh, I just remember what I was going to say. I was going to say, I thought, you know, the name for the internet back in the 90s was cyberspace.
Yeah. Right? Maybe cyberspace on the web. I'm going to surf. I mean, surfing was like, you would literally just like go to a web page. And then there'd be links to other web pages, and then you'd go to another web page, and then there'd be a link. Like, you'd kind of surf web pages. Like, nobody really does that anymore.
Oh, bro. I can't wait for that.
Where you want to go, right?
I can't wait for that. Yeah, dude. That has to be somebody needs to create an app surfing cyberspace in the metaverse. Or surfing the internet.
Well, we if you go into Calcflow, you'll see Nanom, and so, you know, we need to kind of complete that surfing loop where you're mm-hmm. like, oh my god, Nanom, what is that? Click on it, and then boom, you're in Nanom. So, I think we'll get there with different apps, kind of throwing back links to each other.
Yeah, portals.
Yep.
Next up is VR AirBridge, a USB dongle for the Quest 2 to enable wireless PC VR, which was officially announced. This is really cool because I keep having issues, I don't know about you, with AirLink. Sometimes it's amazing, sometimes it's not. You know, my neighborhood just has a bunch of Wi-Fi like enabled devices in general, it seems. So like the channels get crowded and like so then I don't know, my router gets confused. Anyways, so, you know, really awesome to see kind of like this dedicated dongle where I don't have to necessarily rely on my router and I could just plug in a USB stick into my computer directly and boom, I have wireless link, right? So, you know, I'm also kind of hopeful that this might potentially enable more enterprise friendly and science friendly uses of AirLink, because of the fact that, you know, if you have to rely on a router and you have to get corporate permissions to use the router for certain things and stuff, like it sounds like a headache. Whereas if it's just like, you know, a pretty straightforward driver installation and like, boom, you plug in a USB stick, that's like way more straightforward, right? So, excited about this coming out. I don't know, Steve, what's your experience with the AirLink been?
Yeah, I'm a direct linker still. I like having my PC on Ethernet. I like having my headset with the link cable. You know, I bought one of those really nice, expensive, like 12 prong crazy gaming routers. I do think that you can have a comfortable experience if you really try for it. But then in the day, wired connections are more consistent. You know, it's like a dedicated device. That's actually trying to do everything. And so I like the direction of this being a dedicated device where it's not, you know, somebody upstairs streaming Netflix and then you're downstairs trying to, you know, do AirLink on your game. Like, I know in theory they shouldn't conflict with each other due to bandwidth, but you never know with wireless signals, like a lot of interference and different things happen. So, will you still run into issues with this? Like, maybe, but the fact that it's at least a simple onboarding solution for people that just want to link up wirelessly, you plug it in, link up wirelessly. Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah. You know, what I don't hear too much being talked about in particular in regarding this is like how I think it really shows how important it is to have, you know, a Snapdragon processor on your headsets. Like, you can't, it's almost, I don't know, like, you know, in 2022, if you're going to release new hardware, like, you can't not have a XR2 like on your device, because, you know, if you compare this setup with this USB dongle and a Quest 2 to that bulky setup that is the wireless solution for both the Index solution that's coming out, as well as the wireless solution for the Vive Pro, like, it's ridiculously bulky, right? And then, like, this one is super straightforward. And so, like, you know, I think that it really shows, like, you know, the future is kind of like standalone regardless of PCBR or not, because it just allows for this type of, you know, the decompression of the, you know, compressed signals through Wi-Fi to happen, right? Like, if you don't have that, then you need this like crazy external battery looking thing. Like, if you've ever seen those images, right, of like the Quest Pro, or not the Quest Pro, yeah, the Vive Pro. Like,
antler antennas coming out the back.
Yeah. Yeah, like the Vive Pro and the Index wireless solutions are just ridiculous. And like, you know, like, the fact that that has now been compressed because of the advancements that have been made within standalone and all-in-one devices, I think is like really cool, right? So I'm more hopeful. I feel like, you know, this is just, it really shows that all-in-one is also pushing PC VR, not just, you know, mobile VR and AR.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, making it more seamless and just, you know, ready to go, get started, not to worry about things. Like, the wire gets in the way sometimes when I use it. Like, I kind of deal with it for reliability. But yeah, like, being free and wireless, like, I'm even using standalone mode for this. Just, I don't really like having wires, and I don't think anybody really does. Really takes away from the immersive experience of mixed reality, you know, virtual reality, everything.
Yeah. So I wanted to knock out the XR news first. So two more stories here. One is that SideQuest just got, I believe it was an $11 million investment from Google Ventures, which is a really interesting kind of first of its kind. And it really shows that, you know, SideQuest is just getting started, even though like Apple has been released, and also that, you know, Google seems to be at least semi-serious about you know, AR and VR again. You know, I was joking with you know, our colleague Josh that now I'm scared for SideQuest that Google's going to shut it down, because that's the joke of Google. You know, they just shut down Stadia, right? And so like everything that's not search and Gmail and Google Drive, they seem to be shutting down. So, you know, I pray that SideQuest doesn't get shut down by Google. Although, you know, it seems like a minor stake, or even if it might be a major stake, probably don't have a controlling stake within SideQuest. So, you know, not like seriously worried in that sense, but, you know, it does kind of, they don't have a good precedent, right? So,
yeah, I think Oculus really, you know, left a vacuum on this one that SideQuest capitalized on, because I've been seeing a lot of these, I don't know, third party metaverse aggregation, like upload your app and people could download it onto, you know, headsets or whatever. Like, none of them have taken off. Like, if you don't own the hardware, like, yeah, you know, Vive has their own app store, that's been going okay. Meta has their, you know, app store, that's going okay. But then Meta really curated it, like Apple iPhone, you know, did in the early days. And, you know, they left this vacuum for SideQuest to come in and say, hey, you know, we're mostly going to focus on letting Quest gamers get third-party apps that aren't on the store onto their device. And then since that, they've kind of grown into being that thing that everybody tried to be, which is like this, you know, app store that's just kind of independent and not really owned by any of the big hardware players. So it's kind of smart, you know, 12 million. I don't know. It's kind of a lot and it's kind of a little. For Google, it's a little, and they're just kind of like barely getting like maybe one toe in the door of the current push for like metaverse. But at the end of the day, this is $12 million to fund a small software development team that has been probably running on a shoestring of a budget for years, just kind of delivering this to consumers and people that love and enjoy VR. So yeah, I'm excited to see what comes out of this, but also, you know, share your skepticism of, yeah, is this going to get Stadia'd? Hope not.
Yeah. You know, headline I got from Android Central is, forget Stadia. Google's getting back into VR in the way we didn't expect. and they're actually putting in $12 million, right, into Quest, the side Quest, which, yeah, really interesting. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Trojan horsing onto, like, I guess, you know, kind of spreading your bets, right? And like, I mean, this is a tangible way in which they actually benefit from the Quest too.
The closest thing to the Android store is kind of side Quest, and then the closest thing to the Apple store is like the Meta store right now.
Yeah, this is true.
If we take a snapshot.
That's a great analysis. Yeah. Yeah. The so next story
Android.
Yeah, the next story I think you're gonna love, Steve. I don't know if you knew this, but
oh, I know.
Guess. Oh yeah, you know about GameStop and Vario?
Yeah, of course. I follow VR news, and I buy plenty of stuff from GameStop. Like, you could order a Meta, Quest on GameStop. I order on Amazon or Target and other places, but it's the same price, and you could order it anywhere. And I think they also include some accessories on the VR page at GameStop.com. Yeah.
Well, on a slight tangent, right? I think Jimmy hit all-time low volumes because everybody's claiming their own custody of GME stock or something, which is great.
So now, alongside that great VR offering, they're going to be offering the Vario Aero, right? Which is...
Yep.
A company that we've loved. We've had the Vario XR2, right?
Three.
XR3 at the office, and that thing is amazing. And so the Aero is kind of a younger VR brother, like, just kind of does high resolution, does a lot of stuff, but it's not as crazy as the XR3.
Yeah. Well, and no MR, right? So, but they're actually, not only are they offering it at GameStop, you can actually, you're going to be able to demo the Vario Aero at GameStop. So, like, that's really cool. Cause, like, I'm sure a lot of people have tried Gear VR or maybe even the Quest 2, but, like, Vario Aero is, like, fairly up there. Like, it's not, it's not, XR3, like, level, but obviously, like, it is one of the high end, VR options that you can get today. So it's really cool that, like, GameStop is going to offer this as a demo option.
Yeah, well, it makes sense because they've been doing this whole digital transformation where now they're offering PC parts and like gaming PCs available at stores. And so this is really like a nice way to have a showcase storefront where you say, all right, oh, you came here for gaming. Well, here's a Switch. You can buy some Switch games. Like, here's some PCs if you want to really step it up with like the PC gaming and getting really the best graphics that you can. And then here's this crazy thing, the Vario Aero, connect it to your 4090 GPU or whatever you have in there. And you get like just this amazing immersive, like high resolution experience. So I think it makes sense to really just have like the best headset available to show people that, in terms of like VR high resolution and all that. But then, of course, they have the Meta Quest 2 available for, $350 or $400 it is now. So it's kind of the cheaper alternative that a lot of people could get into as an entry VR headset.
Yep. Well, so that's pretty much it for the kind of the VR news. Now on to kind of the science side of things. I mean, the biggest news in the past week is that the Nobel Prizes have been announced and awarded. And then one of them actually was a Scripps professor or a researcher down the street from where we spun out of UC San Diego. And so that was really awesome to see. So trying to pull up the article here.
Yeah, well, it's very relevant with Nanom, right? Because this was for the click chemistry. And the researchers at Scripps have been doing really great biochemistry work for decades. We've had interactions with the Molecular Graphics Lab, with Art Olson and Dave Goodsell, who makes a lot of the illustrations. And so they're just kind of a leader in the whole space. And seeing their actual research, it's everything from studying viral diseases to, understanding new types of ways to do chemistry. And so I think that was a very well-deserved Nobel Prize. So congratulations to the Scripps team and Dr. Sharpless.
Yeah, so the tweet that I have pulled up here is that click chemistry, a term Sharpless coined, refers to the Lego TM like ease of fitting modular chemicals together to form complex molecules. The ingenious platform has transformed how scientists approach drug discovery, bioimaging, and more. So researcher K. Barry Sharpless, PhD, was awarded the 2022 Nobel Prize in Chemistry, which is just awesome. Just, you know, down the street from us, Nobel Prize winner.
Yep, this is his second Nobel Prize, right? Yeah. So
what a beast! What a beast! Yep. Yeah, we should get him into nano.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, he could, you know, show off his click chemistry in virtual reality and, you know, explain with literal molecules in his hands. You know, maybe even his thought process behind it, you know, how he started thinking about it when he was working on this, of course. And yeah, really just educate the community here.
Yeah, there was a lot of different science stories to choose from, but that was definitely kind of the most relevant and also, you know, near our hearts, given the neighborhood of San Diego and La Jolla. But we wanted to make sure we cover some crypto matters, given the how crypto is integral to the metaverse. Fairly large development with the U.S. government and regulatory clarity on the journey of regulatory clarity with blockchain and crypto. And so the headline from Quartz is that crypto companies can't avoid legal liability by forming a DAO. And so basically they kind of talk through an example in which individuals are responsible for whatever happens with the DAO, which is kind of the opposite of like what happens with a, you know, a LLC limited liability partnership or a C corp, where, you know, individuals aren't responsible for whatever happens with the organization. And so I thought, you know, this is fairly interesting. My biggest contention point here is that, like, with pseudo anonymous accounts where you can't necessarily identify a person per se, it's going to be fairly hard to do, like, you know, identify a certain individual. But I guess if the FBI gets their way and can really track everything, like, it's still not ideal that you'll be held liable for the actions of a DAO. Yeah. But
I mean, there's a lot of ways to look at this, right? Let's just say, you know, you have some DAO that did something, you know, truly illegal. I don't know. Not something even in the gray area where it's just like they're trying to utilize new technology to solve some problems. But like, you know, they're actually a malicious organization. You know, in that case, it's like, well, there are people behind it. And like, you know, are they going to look at who has the most voting power in these organizations? Like, who's actually calling the shots? Are they going to go after everyone that just has like a penny worth of tokens that's just kind of voting to play with the technology? Or are they looking for the, you know, DAOs that have a, you know, 51% whale that's just kind of, you know, deciding a lot of stuff anyways? But then, like you said, right, there's going to be a lot of pseudo anonymity there. You know, what does the legal structure look like for a DAO in terms of compatibility with the current legal structure? Like, you know, can a LLC DAO kind of do its own thing where it is an LLC, but then it's like kind of managed and ran by a community of decentralized people? So I don't know. There's just so many questions that
I feel like I'll ever
laws, man.
I feel like I'll ever, you know, if I ever vote and become active in DAOs, I'll only ever vote from multiple devices at a coffee shop or something with like burner phones. Cause then it's like, yeah, I have complete,
like, you're gonna trace that, right? You're like, what were you, mind your own coins? Like, you know, you got them from some other account that, you know, gave them or bought them from some exchange. Like,
yeah, but then you can't prove them that, like, those, you know, like, you were the owner. Like, you can prove that, like, a device that accessed that IP address was the, you know, address that voted on those or whatever, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like you're just looking for a Ross Walker coffee shop situation. Or sorry, not a Ross Ulbricht coffee shop situation. Yeah, it's like, yeah, using the local Starbucks Wi-Fi is not really record-breaking form of anonymity either.
No. I'm saying if you use multiple burner phone devices at a public access point, then it could, there's always plausible deniability that it was like, you know, people who congregated at that point to vote to do something.
I don't know about that. None of this is legal advice.
Yes. I mean, I'm just, you know, speaking in these hypotheticals because this is what, you know, crypto and blockchain enables, right? We actually had a little bit of this discussion with our friend Jason. I forgot his last name. But Jason with the Platformers series, right? Where it's like, how do you, like... Yeah. And like, how do you actually, you know, where the rubber meets the road and the ideal libertarianism meets, you know, meets practical reality. Like, how does it actually, you know, work out? And I feel like this is one of those where like, I'm questioning the enforceability of personal liability, right? Like if you sign pieces of paper that you submit to a local, you know, court that says you did that, then yes, of course there's like personal liability because you're identified. But when in a pseudo anonymous internet, right?
Yeah, but I mean, with our lawyer hat, right? You know, I'm not a lawyer again, but like, you know, just kind of looking at.
But if you were to have a hat
statement, well, the legal statements that they're making in this article, right? Everyone knows that you can't trade derivatives in the United States without a license. To say that you can do it just because you moved it to DAO is uninformed and dangerous. So does that make sense? Like, you know, if you were to do this through a corporation, you would need to have a license. And so if you have a licensed corporation or you know, broker license, whatever you need to trade derivatives, and then you form a DAO that also makes decisions on this, like, yeah, where does that land in this area? But obviously, I don't think that they just had a DAO. They had no legal structure, to my knowledge. And then they were just basically doing the derivatives trading as a DAO. And so then what, they're going after the founders of B0X. So yeah, I don't know. Like, let's see how these things end up playing out in the courts, because a lot of precedent is both, action, as well as, what things the defendants do once that action has been, you know, attempted to be enforced. And so this could be precedent in one way or a different way when we end up seeing it go through the system. But yeah, you know, hey, the blockchain doesn't leave you, outside of the jurisdiction of the CFTC and all these other 3 and 4 letter organizations.
Yep. I mean, I don't know. There was some significant opposition from very different, you know, parties and legal firms. So it, you know, like, it would be interesting to see how, like, it's still not quite like certain how much they're actually going to enforce this going forward. And in fact, like, I think, you know, this is just one major case that is somewhat, you know, setting somewhat of a precedent, but like, you know, going forward, I'm sure there's going to be more and more DAO cases, right? Like, Steve, we were talking about how, you know, you tried to buy the constitution or whatever, right? So like, well, what does that mean in terms of personal liability in that sense? Like, I mean, it doesn't matter as much, right?
Is that DAO going to be liable for attempting to bid on a true authentic copy of the U.S. Constitution? I don't know. I hope not.
Yeah. It's ironic. We the people. Right? yeah. But, wait, no, that's the preamble.
Do I still think that we are going to buy the Constitution? You know, anything is possible in the world. But, yep, didn't work out because a large hedge fund guy kind of bid ahead of the DAO because he knew how much money the DAO had. So
I mean, on the bright side, that is
sad, you know, move true from Ken Griffin to outbid the Constitution DAO.
But I mean, the good news is that is also true free market capitalism, right? Like, you know, anybody can bid higher.
It is. Yeah, but you know what is he really wanted it that bad, and he had been eyeing it for so long. Does he really need it? Like, I don't know. I would have preferred it to go to the DAO because I think it was a cool idea, and whatever, capitalism, it's part of the world.
Yep. Well, with that, you know, next week is a fairly big week with MetaConnect, what we look forward to every year. So be sure to tune into MetaConnect, and we'll catch you in the next week's episode. Thank you very much.
Cool. Thanks, everyone. And we'll see you in the Science Metaverse.